You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Christine Staton about performance-based compensation. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Dr. Christine Staton earned her DVM degree from Colorado State University in 1999 and a Master of Business Administration from Louisiana State University in 2023. She is a large animal veterinarian, the owner of a mixed animal practice with two locations, and is also a practice consultant. She's dedicated to nurturing the next generation through mentorship programs for veterinary students as well as new graduates, ensuring the long-term sustainability of the veterinary field. Welcome, Dr. Staton. It's so good to have you with us today.
So much. I'm so excited to be here. I absolutely love this podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, and I loved your great presentation at the 2025 AAEP convention in Denver. You did it on performance-based compensation, and I knew I just had to have you on the podcast because it was just such, it was a lot of great ideas. What prompted your interest in doing this system at your practice?
Well, most things, doing something incredibly wrong and having to find a solution is how this came about in our practice. And many people will remember pay stubs. When we would give pay stubs on every other Friday, everyone got handed a paper pay stub, and it said how much their wages were and how much their paycheck was going to be, and it was in an envelope. But a bunch of my team members on a Friday night went out to teppanyaki for dinner. And at that dinner, they started opening their pay stubs and comparing them to each other. And there was a lot of discrepancies. And I didn't hear about it till the next morning when I had a lot of people real mad in my office. And they had a lot of questions that I couldn't answer, which was, why does this person make more than I do? Wait, I trained this person. Why are they making more? Why am I only making this? Wait, this person I was hired at this wage? And they asked me these questions, and I said, I don't know, to all of them. Like, I don't know. I lost control. I don't know why that she makes more than you. I hired her more. And I realized when I hire people, at the time I was doing all the hiring, I didn't know what to hire them for. So I kind of guessed based on what they were paid at their last job, what their experience looked like. But it didn't always translate to what their experience was or their efficiency and all the other things that generate, you know, turn into an ROI on somebody. So I kind of guessed, right? And then it was also market fluctuations. If there were 30 applicants for the position, I could offer less. If there's 30 positions for one applicant, I'm going to offer more. And it just got out of control. And I had really upset people, and they all had a right to be upset. And I thought, there has to be a better way. And so I started looking for one. I just really dove into research, and I couldn't find one. And I thought, well, I'm going to make one for my practice only, just because, honestly, because I was kind of lazy and like, I don't know, I'm making a mess. I'm just going to create a really streamlined system. So I created it selfishly so that I had an easy system. But what it turned into was so much more. There's so much value in it that I didn't even anticipate we would see in our practice.
So I do have a question, because the story you just told makes me want to say, so were you kind of transparent with them? Did you apologize? Did you tell them, I'm going to fix this? How did you keep them from like spinning out of control and saying, okay, the heck with this, I'm out of here?
I didn't. They left. Like, I lost
half of them. Oh my God.
No, yeah, I lost half of them. I could not. So looking at it, nothing was going to be appropriate or fair. If I raised everybody to what the top person was making and made them all equal, I couldn't afford that first.
Right.
And there would be inequalities there. Like people would say, well, wait, I trained this person. Shouldn't I make more? But then this person would say, but I do the inventory counts. Shouldn't I make more? You know, it just, there was no easy solution.
What a crisis. Oh my God.
It was a mess. And the reality is they have a right to do this. And any practice needs to understand
that
they
lawful.
Can all talk about it. Right. Yeah. So I didn't want it to be hidden anymore. I was like, I want a post on the wall that says, if you're a tier zero tech, you make this. If you're a tier one tech, you make this. If you're a tier two tech, you make this. I wanted the transparency there. And we had at the time, it was a mixed animal practice, but we had a separate small and large. So we had small animal technicians, large animal technicians, technician assistants, pet resort attendants, and receptionists. So I made five different tier-based compensation structures for them so that they could work through them. And they were, it was self-motivated.
Yeah.
And no one was ever going to ask me for a raise or get a raise in a performance review moving forward because I messed those up too. I would skip, like I wouldn't get around to performance reviews or I'd get to this one, but oh, I'm overdue for that one. Or somebody would ask for a raise and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. You can have a raise.
Sure.
But then the quiet person doesn't ask.
Right.
Like it's just all of it was a mess. And I'm ambulatory. So I'm not physically there. I'm not meeting with people like I should be. I didn't, back then, I didn't have a CEO day that was dedicated, which now I couldn't live without.
Right. So you had this crisis. How long did it take you to like, I know that it was not the final version, but like, how long did it take you to just like put something together so that you could, as you hired new people, have some organization? Did it take like months or?
3-4 years.
Oh, God.
Totally ridiculous. I now teach people how to do this through my workshop and they get it done in 3 months.
Right.
For me, I did
you
it.
Were creating
I didn't do it, well.
It from the scratch. I mean,
and
were,
I didn't do it well. Yeah. I didn't ask my team to help do it, which now I advocate. Like I tell them, you're a tech, write down everything you did today. And now I can easily make a list. Instead, I was just making lists from jobs I wasn't doing. And I made it much, much harder. But it did take me 4 years of really working on it and honing it to what I thought was perfect. We've since obviously made some significant changes from that original version, but we rolled it out probably, 12, 13 years ago. And I have no regrets. Like it is the best thing that we have done for our culture and for attracting the right people. We attract self-motivated people because they know there's a path to growth and career for themselves. They have control of their wages. There are people that like that. And the people that don't like that aren't a great fit to work for us. And that's a nice thing that because I want self-motivated people for 100 other reasons, right?
Yeah, right.
So it was a side effect I did not anticipate that made it really nice. There was also obviously not the tension of who makes more because everyone can move up.
Everyone can do it if they,
Yes, yeah.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
Do you suggest or recommend that practices that want to try this, that they ask their different groups, like their technicians or whatever, to say, what do you think would be appropriate tiers? Or do you just ask for what? I mean, because a lot of times when people are a part of it, they all have more ownership and they're like, what do you think?
That's part of messed up. So I think that the best thing is any change is scary for everyone.
Oh,
and I think I, in the background, started working, would start working on it, and then bring in some of my key people, especially the people who I think are going to be the most opposed to it, and talk to them individually and really get their buy-in on the actual program itself, on why this is better for them, because that's what's important to them. This is better for them. So get that, so that I've got these people who understand the value. They might be the people that everyone else in the practice looks up to. They might be the people that are loudest. They might be the people that are usually more opposed to things. I want to get them individually helping me. Hey, this is what I'm thinking. This is why. Poke holes in this. I want to get all of the objections from them first. So we work through those objections well before we have this big presentation. And then we bring
this
people.
This is like a textbook of change management.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes. Love. My favorite MBA course probably was change management because I learned from it. Yeah.
And did you guys do the thing from Harvard Business School where it was actually like an interactive game where you had to, what are you going to do? Are you going to talk to this person or that? Oh my God.
Oh. It sounds like something I should go through. I love it.
Yeah, we did that in my MBA in the change management, and it was like people just did kind of badly on it. They had us do it early so that we were, you know, kind of thrown back going, man, my instincts are not good.
Yeah. Well, and you didn't have the tips and tricks and logic behind how to do it. That's really cool, actually. I would love to.
They had us do it again. And it was a really good way to teach us.
Yeah. Well, this is all about change management because you're scaring everybody. And in ours, and then I bring it up to everybody and say, hey, this is what we're going to do. And I want all of your input. What are the things that you do? And then once I have the whole list, then there's some natural breaks that, that you say, okay, for us, we had some pretty natural breaks where a tier one person can do this, a tier two person can do this, a tier three can do this. And I don't care if half of my team stays a tier two technician. I don't care. They can stay there. That's very valuable to me. But I'd like to have a couple tier threes. Now in my clinic, I have zero tier fives. I have 55 team members. I have zero tier fives, and I'm fine with that. I don't need them. If I had one, I could pass off some stuff to them. But I don't want somebody to do it that doesn't need to. But any of them could be that if they chose to take on some of those responsibilities. Right. So I think the biggest objection we got that I think most people get is the more experienced and seasoned and tenured people, we make everyone go back to tier zero, not in pay, but in responsibility. So they have to go through all of the stuff. And in each tier, we have a list of basically soft skills, hard skills, and knowledge. So they have for soft skills, we've got a lot of some role playing that we do so that we can see that in action. Or if it really happens, if it says, you know, can manage an angry client well, and we see them do that, we don't need to do any role playing if we see them do that well a few times. A hard skill might be maybe putting an IV catheter in a horse. So that hard skill, we're going to make them log five of those. They have to do five and they just self-log them. And then a test might be on medical math. We might have a medical math test and it would be more of a story. Like this horse is standing in front of me. It weighs this much. I want you to give it, you know, 10 mgs per mil or 10 mgs per kg of this medication. How much are you going to give it? How much are you going to send home with the owner? You know, what does that look like on the prescription bottle? So we made our really seasoned people go back to square one and do everything in each tier. And we got a lot of pushback, but I would do that again because there in every tier, there were a couple things that they had to learn that they didn't know how to do that they just kind of gotten by without doing. A great example is we had a tech who was real real good. And I realized she didn't know how to use a refractometer. And I didn't want to call her out on it because she was the type of person who would be devastated if I figured that out. And by making her go through the tiers, she had to learn how to use a refractometer. We have an SOP on how to do it.
Right, and right.
She got that skill in a way that wasn't embarrassing to her. Mm-hmm. And when we rolled it out, we told everyone they keep their pay and 6 months from today, whatever tier you've elevated to, that's the pay you get. And we knew.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. And we knew based on that, that every single person in the practice was going to get a small raise because they were all capable. And yeah. I lost about 20% of my team over a year. And I think I think that's normal with big change. Mm-hmm. And some of them, I was really upset. Like, why would they leave? They're so good. But they weren't a good fit for what was a huge culture change for us and a positive culture change for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's important that you bring that out, that change, you know, it rocks the boat. You
sure.
know, you're sending some waves and they're rocking the boat. And some people jump overboard and swim for shore.
Yeah.
You know, it's good for people to know that that can happen. But what happens is that things get better.
And, yes.
And I just love that you then have confidence that the people that you employ know these certain skills, right? I mean, that's pretty cool.
I think so. And I think there's also some legal protection from that too. Mm-hmm. When I can show that this individual has gone through these trainings and done this and logged this, I think there's something there. We haven't had a legal situation before, but that we've had to pull out tests and stuff. But I think I would like to think that it would show, hey, we didn't just say this person's trained. They're really trained. And maybe it would be beneficial in the future. Yeah, that's not the goal of it. But I like that we have these tests and these logs mm-hmm. from everybody.
Right. One of the things that I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that after that initial time when they were achieving in 6 months where they were going to land, did you have like you have to be 6 months at a certain level before you can move up?
Yeah, we have the pretty things? Big gaps. Okay. Yeah, there's only five tiers. And what we don't want is to create a system where within a year somebody hits the top and now they've hit a ceiling.
Right. Right.
And also, if all they're doing is pursuing the next tier, they're not perfecting the skills in that tier. So we want them to stay there. Some of them have you have to stay there a year. So there's some tenure things in there that they have to hang out in there. Now, we make some exceptions to that. If we're in a military town. Uh-huh. And so sometimes we get a lot of people who are moving in. So let's say someone, their spouse is relocated here. They are a highly skilled, credentialed technician.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give them a quicker path to get to that. I may even start their pay at tier two, saying you have to attain that within a certain period of time.
Right.
So we've figured out over the years, like there are exceptions that we can still use the system appropriately and with the same transparency, while also not scaring people away. If we've got that person coming in with a expectation of a wage, and we say, "Oh, everyone here starts at tier one wage," we're going to lose that person.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely.
This works.
What is
for
the difference, give or take? Like, is it like with each tier $1 an hour?
There's a big gap between for us tier three and tier four, so it's more than $1.
Right.
Tier zero is what we hire them at. Tier one is after they do their orientation, so it's usually 90 days later we're giving them that wage. So it's just 50 cents because it just means they got through their onboarding and orientation.
Yeah.
So they're varied based on what makes sense to us, and we change them. So also they change with just cost of living. So when we're doing well at the practice, when our non-doctor payroll numbers are looking good, then we can go in and give tier increases just randomly. So if somebody's sitting at tier two forever, which is fine, they're going to get periodic raises. Yes. We don't do it annually. We don't do it relative to anything outside environment. It's very internal how we decide when that happens. Yeah. And my team understands that. If our non-doctor payroll is significantly above 20%, we're not going to be able to do that. And I say that those are small animal numbers. Large animals a little different in terms of numbers, but we do take all of that into account when we decide, okay, we're going to do some tier wage increases. And we've done it where we only do increases in, we had a time when we had a lot of people at two and nobody was thinking of going up. So we made three significantly more. And then
all of a sudden there was some motivation.
Yeah. So we can play with it a little bit to go there, but it's absolutely beautiful that that's their decision. I've never heard anybody say, I don't get paid enough here, or she never gives me a raise. Like those things are just out of our culture. We had somebody at our morning huddle one morning. I'll never forget it. She was standing there and she goes, "Oh, just so everyone knows, I'm pursuing tier four right now. My husband and I are thinking of buying a house. So there's a few skills I'm going to need you to pull me for. If you see any of these come in, can you grab me?" And I just thought that was like the win. I wasn't involved.
That is fabulous.
Right? Yeah, there's so many layers to how good that is.
Yeah. And giving people choice and self-actualization. Like, it is so motivating. It's fabulous. So that's, I think, one of the best aspects, you know, is that they're in control of their destiny. But do you have other things you think are the best? We could argue about it. You could tell me what difficulties you've encountered. I mean, other than people just going, okay, my head's blowing up, I have to go.
Right. Yeah. I think the difficulties are somewhere self, I impose them on myself. I didn't roll it out well. My change management was not good when we rolled it out. Mm-hmm. I think I could have done that better. But the other difficulties are someone does need to manage this. So I managed it for a while. And now my manager, my general manager does. But someone does need to spend the time to manage it. If somebody requests a tier review, you need to sit with them and review it. And so we go over all of it. We send out emails to all the doctors they work with and other team members in the practice. So everyone every now and then gets an email and it just has a list that says this person's ready to requesting a tier advancement. Here are the skills, hard skills, soft skills, and knowledge-based things that are important for this. Do you have any concerns, any areas you think they need improvement in? And we might get back a little bit of, yeah, actually, I think that they need improvement in this. And that can be from any peer. And our goal then is to help them achieve that. So we sit with them and we say, hey, here are the two areas we think that you don't have perfected enough to move to the next tier. Let's figure out a plan to get you there. So we're going to, let's say it's, you can't take a history in less than 5 minutes. Like you can't, you just aren't doing that. And that's one of our skills. You have to be able to get that history in less than 5 minutes and then go get the doctor for in-clinic appointments. So we're going to say, okay, here's how we're going to help you. Here's a timer. We're going to have you log. You're going to go in. I'm going to have you, we're going to record you. And then we're going to record somebody who can do it in 4 minutes. And we're going to see what the differences are. We're going to help them move through. We want them to move through the tiers. This isn't, we're not trying to create barriers. So they're
gonna teach them how to interrupt people and when they're on one of their long side stories.
How to make it polite. You know. Yeah. So that there needs to be a person that's doing that. And depending on how many people are in your practice, this may be really busy. This may not be really busy. We also now review our tiers annually, which is a big deal. Like we go through and say, oh gosh, we never, you know, once we started using the Imagist, we didn't put that in here as something that they need to do. Oh, but we still have this in. We don't run snap tests on foals anymore. Right. So we need to take that out. So annually, we also have to be reviewing them and keeping them up to date. Somebody needs to be in charge of that. And so that could be you. It was me at the beginning. And honestly, it was worth it for me because that I'd rather put the time in there than have people mutiny, you know, and leave.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Yeah. And you got really, really, really familiar with the system and what you were asking people to do. I mean, I think it made sense for you to, you know, sort of be on top of it at first.
Absolutely. You know,
until it was well established. And then,
yeah,
right?
I agree. Exactly.
Is there anything else that listeners should know? Anything else you'd like to share about how you put this into place and how they can do the same?
Yeah. First, I think that if you have a system that's running well and it's working for you, then you shouldn't change it because change management is hard on your team. But if you're like me, where raises were a pain, how much to hire them for was a pain, you weren't doing it really well, or you didn't have a system that you liked, this is one alternative that works incredibly well for us. It attracts the people I want to attract. It detracts the people that I really don't want to be interviewing at our place. It selfishly makes it so I'm not making what really were subjective decisions. They weren't very objective. Now they're pretty objective, and creates a culture of learning and growing that we love in our practice. Everyone, we always say that in our practice, everyone in our practice is a learner, a grower, a teacher, and a trainer, because we take veterinary students, we take veterinary tech students, we love hiring new grads, we love hiring new grad technicians. So everyone has to be learning, growing, teaching, and training. And there's a lot of people that don't want to work in that environment. That's fine. But for us, we like that and it attracts that type of person. So yeah, right. I think that it's worth considering if what you have right now isn't working.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to let everybody know that if they want to read more, the proceedings that are in the 2025 AAEP proceedings book were great as far as providing detail. So if you want more detail, you can reach out to Dr. Staton, or you can read her proceedings, or you can do both.
Yes, absolutely. And they can definitely reach out just directly through my website, which is veterinary-mba.com. And I read all of those personally. So I'd love to talk to other practice owners and managers of practices.
That's great. Thank you, Dr. Staton, for being with us today. This is a great topic and you've covered it so well.
Thank you so much. I'm glad a mistake turned into something that's really working for us.
Yeah, it sure is. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thank you to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave. Embrace change.